Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Members of the Bandido Motorcycle Club made their presence known this Labor Day weekend in the Black Hills of South Dakota. South Dakota law enforcement interacted with various gang members issuing citations for traffic, narcotics, and firearm violations. Now joining us for insight into the activities of the self-described Bandido Nation, we welcome Captain Tony Harrison. He's with the Pennington County Sheriff's Department. Captain Harrison is also National Trustee for the South Dakota Fraternal Order of Police. Tony, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning, Lori. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So I'm out in Custer. I'm washing my car, and I look up, and they were definitely making their presence known loudly going up and down the streets of Custer. There was, I don't know, maybe 16 to 20 people wearing full colors for the Bandidos. A little bit of a surprise for me because we haven't seen them in the state in those numbers for a while, have we?
Well, the last national run, which was what this was in 2019 here this last weekend, was in 2017. They had a national run. So that had been the last time we had a big presence of them. Every year during the rally, we have a few that show up out in the Sturgis area. But when the numbers as big as this, it would have been 2017, the last time they were here.
All right. So the Bandidos build themselves as the largest 1% motorcycle club in the Western Hemisphere. Help us understand what that means. What's a 1% motorcycle club?
Well, the 1%, when they claim to be a 1%er or a 1% member, they talk about, you know, the 1% motorcycle riders that you have to worry about. It's kind of a badge and honor for them. 99% of motorcyclists are just folks who have a motorcycle and cruise around. And back in the olden days, when these clubs really took off, if you had a tattoo, a beard, and a motorcycle, you were kind of considered an outlaw. Well, times have changed, and everybody has motorcycles now, and that's not the case. But these folks still kind of hold to that standard, and they want to be kind of known as we're the 1% you need to worry about, we're the 1% that we're the toughest and the baddest of the group, and that's how they kind of build themselves, which is why they wear that 1% diamond on their cut.
All right. So, what are their signature activities?
Well. The outlaw motorcycle gang subculture is very big into narcotics, very big into weapons. There's also human trafficking. There's all explosives. There's all kinds of things that they're involved with. It's a criminal element as a whole. And folks will tell you when we deal with them, they're like, oh, we're not a gang. We're a club or a riding club. Okay, well, I understand that. But you go and Google the last two or three national presidents of the Bandidos, and look what they've been arrested for in federal charges. It includes robberies and assaults and murders and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, it's just not a riding club. It is a criminal organization.
Why bring the national run to South Dakota? What is it, just a national gathering? Why here?
Well, I wasn't part of the decision, if that's what you're asking.
I'm sure you were not.
There is a clubhouse in Rapid City, in South Dakota, in the OMG world, the outlaw motorcycle gang world, is considered to be a quote South Dakota territory because there is a presence here in South Dakota, and there has been for many years. And so, I suspect they bring here every year or two because they want to maintain that presence in the state. And it's a big state because of the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Obviously, the motorcycle world in this OMG circles have territory and stuff like that they claim and they claim as their own. And South Dakota has been claimed by the Bandidos and has been for years. And I think it's just part of their way of saying, hey, this is still ours. No one like the Hells Angels or Mongols or Outlaws try to move in and take it.
All right. Do we have members of those other clubs as well in the state in a smaller presence?
We do. Yeah. Absolutely. We have known patch members of the Sons of Silence. The Hells Angels have been in South Dakota. And I believe the Outlaws as well. Now, other clubs like the Mongols and Vagos, they've been through here. We've seen them through here. But really, the biggest one of the Bandidos and the other ones are kind of, I wouldn't say making a play for the state, but they are certainly interested in trying to become a more permanent resident of South Dakota.
For South Dakotans who, and as you mentioned so many times, you would see somebody wearing a jacket. You see people on motorcycles all the time. You might be one of those people on the motorcycles wearing something on the back of your jacket. How do people recognize the Bandidos Club members? What are we looking for?
Right. So these the OMG clubs or the gangs have a particular style of dress. And that is what we call a three-piece patch. And every patch will have a center logo. The Bandidos is what's called the Fat Mexican. It's a dude with a sombrero and a semi-automatic handgun and a machete. And so that's the center logo for the Bandidos. Of course, the Top Rocker will always say the name of the club: Bandidos, Outlaws, Hells Angels, Mongols, Sons of Silence, whoever it is. And the Bottom Rocker will typically tell you where they're from. So the South Dakota Bandits were South Dakota, Colorado, Texas, Washington, where the respective states. And so when you're looking at them, you've got to look at the logo, the Top Rocker and the Bottom Rocker. There's a lot of folks will just put like a skull on the back of their vest or something. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. A lot of people put patches on their bikes or on their vests when they go on rides because they just want to show where they've been. That doesn't mean anything. It's particular to the three-piece patch. Their name will be on it. Their colors will be on it. The Bandits, for example, are red on gold. The Hells Angels are red on white. And so if there's the color scheme, the three-piece patch, the name, that's what shows you they're the one percenters, not just a regular rider.
How do they earn those patches? How do they earn those colors?
Well, there's different ways to obviously earn your actual colors. To be a member, you have to be a prospect. You've got to be sponsored by a full patch member. You have to do things for the gang, for the crew, and those things could range from any number of things, of just being available to get whatever is needed for the picnic next weekend, up to more violent crimes. And so to get their patch, they have to go through a process. And obviously there's been many people out there in the federal world, Jay Dobbins and Bill, William Queen and some other folks who have infiltrated these outlaw motorcycle gangs. And you can read the stories on how they've done it and what they have to do specifically. But they have to show loyalty, and it really comes down to a loyalty to the club first, and to everybody else second. And if you're willing to do that, then that's their first step. And then the standing, I guess it's not a joke, but the standing reasoning is, if you have to ask how to become a member, then you're not the right guy to be a member.
All right, so for people in South Dakota who kind of come across these people, how do you want the general public to respond?
You know, quite honestly, as a whole, they just want to be left alone, the same as everybody else. They just want to do their thing. A lot of them here because they have to be. It's a mandated run. So if the national president orders them all to be here, one from each club, they've got a one from each chapter, they got to be here. And so some folks are here just because they have to be. Some folks are here because it's reunion time. The Seed Brothers, they haven't seen in a long time. But as for the general public, you know, these guys just want to be left alone. You know, when they're in singles and doubles, they're just usually people out there doing their thing. They can have a pack mentality. So if there's more than four or five or six of them and they have a problem with somebody, they always tend to gang up on that person because that's how they operate. That's their motive. But as a whole, 99.9% of the public's going to have no issues with them. If you bump one of them with your vehicle or something, yeah, you could have troubles. If they think you cut them off, they might get a little lippy with you. If you get too close on your vehicle to their motorcycle, they carry these long straps on their handlebars. They may swing that at your vehicle. But I will tell you, for the number we had in the hills and the number of people we had in the hills, we had very little problem with the general motoring public and them. They stuck mostly to themselves. They made some show of presence. They ran stop signs. You know, if there's eight of them in a bike, the first two guys might pull out and the other six will follow right behind running that stop sign. And so the people coming down the road got to slow down, run in the middle of them. Just intimidation stuff like that is probably their biggest thing that they do regularly.
How does law enforcement prepare for a national run and on a smaller scale really prepare for any kind of necessary interaction?
Sure. So every year, Captain James Johns and I with the Rapid City PD, work with DCI, work with the Highway Patrol, and all the other FBI, ATF, the other three-digit agencies that we deal with. We just get together, we discuss, you know, what we think we need to plan. We typically put together a number of deputies and officers and troopers that will just work together to help keep an eye on them, I guess you could say. I will tell you, the first thing we do, Captain Johns and I went Thursday afternoon to the Bandido Clubhouse. We found the guy in charge of the clubhouse. We gave him our cell phone numbers, and we said, hey, if you have issues, you call us. And if we have issues with the Bandido out there somewhere in the middle of the night, we're going to call you. because we really want to keep everything as chill as we can, as calm as we can. And we know that if we can sit down and chat with somebody, we might be able to save ourselves a lot of hassle. And so we do all of that. And you got to remember, there's people all over the country rely on the information that we collected this weekend to find out who's involved. Are people from their hometown involved? Is there a guy who they were looking for that we happen to pull over here when we got his current address? You know, just the intelligence that goes across this goes nationwide and actually internationally, because the bandits do have many chapters across the world.
Tell me how this has changed in the age of social media. As I was looking online, what I was finding the most often was video posted by club members about their interaction with law enforcement officers as they documented it and put it online. How has that sort of changed the way you do your job, especially in relation to outlaw motorcycle clubs?
Well, we don't change how we do our job. We are always professional. We always treat it with respect, the same as we do everybody. And we do nothing different with them than we do anybody else. If we stop them, it's for lawful reasons. We don't pull them over just because they're wearing colors. We have legal reasons to stop them, and we deal with them like we do everybody else. The difference with social media is it gets out there quicker. People can see it. I know there are many times I was talking to people, and they had their cell phone camera up and point right at me. I'm okay with that. And the reason I'm okay with that, number one, I know I'm professional. Number two, I know the folks I work with are professional. And number three, I know I'm legally and lawfully there. But fourth, I've also got a body camera that's shining back right at them and recording the entire traffic stop. So we have to have that for prosecution purposes. When we find things like guns and drugs and other things, we have that video evidence, which we can use if we need to go to court in trials. And so all social media does is get the message out there quicker. And I know that, some folks are like, hey, these people never bother anybody. And that's true. They usually don't bother anybody. But you can see the amount of guns we took off these people. And we know that many of these club members, not all of them, are tied to very violent crimes in other parts of the country.
Captain Tony Harrison, before I let you go, I'm going to just quick change the subject. And after the recent shootings in Texas with the number of law enforcement officers who were killed trying to take down that shooter, when you hear news like that and really, obviously as a human being, it impacts you, but it also impacts you professionally. Tell me a little bit about what some of those conversations that you have with fellow cops when you have a loss of life in police officers like we recently had.
So when people gun down police officers illegally, that kind of stuff, you mean?
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it's a concern for us. We have concern that there are people who are so willing to disregard the laws of human nature and the laws of the land that they're willing to shoot other people and at us. And obviously we're diligent. We're careful. We do the best we can to investigate any tips or leads we have. I will tell you that the PD and the SO and the Highway Patrol and the DCI, we work together very well, the FBI, that when we get these tips, we work them hard to make sure we can avoid things. And so from the law enforcement side, it's discouraging. It's sad. It makes me sad for the human race that we are doing this to ourselves. But we don't choose to do it. We are unfortunately the ones that are thrust into the events, whether we want to be or not, because we're there to respond and to protect the folks that are innocent, that need the protection that they need. And if you think about the shooting, I forget where it was, in Ohio at the bar just a couple of weeks ago, the video camera of the Ohio officers running directly into the line of fire versus away from it. That's what we have to do, and that's what I'm proud to say I'm a part of as a group of men and women that are willing to do that.
Captain Tony Harrison is National Trustee for the South Dakota Fraternal Order of Police, and he's a captain with the Pennington County Sheriff's Department. Tony, thanks so much. Be safe.
Thank you.